Welcome to the Master Builders Podcast, the podcast made by Master Builders for Master Builders. Today we speak with Sean Schmidtke, National Director for Industrial Relations for Master Builders Australia. Today's podcast is part two of where I interview Sean about industrial relations and a whole lot of things that you need to be aware of.
We're joined by Mr. Sean Schmidtke, the IR guru. Thank you for joining us. It's lovely to have you here.
Thanks for having me back on the show, Max.
It's good to have you here. So tell me, I seem to recall that there were changes to the sexual harassment laws. I thought that we already had sexual harassment laws. So what's going on and what are the changes?
Yes, so this is an interesting one. So this was another change that took effect late in 2022. And you're dead right, Max. We previously had under the Sex Discrimination Act and legislation like that, a prohibition on workplace sexual harassment that existed and applied to all workplaces. What has now transpired is the government has included a specific prohibition on sexual harassment in connection with work into the Fair Work Act. And what they've done is they basically put in place a range of new obligations for employers and also a range of new actions that are available to employees in the event that they feel that they've been subject to sexual harassment in the workplace.
So, feel free to correct me on this one. Does that mean that the sexual harassment laws that we already have in place aren't effective? I mean, when I see this weird tiering or layering of legislation that seems to cover the same ground, it either smacks of failure of the first law or maybe unnecessary complications in the second. What's happened? Has the first lot just not worked?
Well, that's a very good question. Firstly, understand that the new changes in the Fair Work Act have actually created a higher positive duty on employers than what previously existed in it and currently exists in the Sex Discrimination Act. Under the Fair Work Act, you now have a duty to take all reasonable steps to prohibit sexual discrimination and sexual harassment in connection with work. So that's higher than under the sexual discrimination laws, which talk about an employer basically taking a sort of, you know, as far as reasonably practicable approach. The employer now has a much higher onus in that they must take all reasonable steps to prevent the conduct from occurring. And it's not just conduct in the workplace, it's conduct in connection with work. So that's the second element of this particular change.
So is that outside? Can I throw an example at you? If two people that work together are sending each other text messages after work, and that becomes into a point where someone is feeling harassed, So I guess what I'm asking is, are these things that happen outside of the work environment now? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, well, look, it's anything that basically would occur that but for the employment relationship existing or that person having a job would not have happened. So, for example, if an employee goes to a pub after work and they run into one of your suppliers or subbies, and that particular subby or supplier happens to engage in what might be considered sexual harassment of that worker, then that worker will be able to say, well, I know these people by virtue of the fact that I work for company X, they are a subcontractor or a supplier to company X, and therefore it's arguable that the harassment has been committed in connection with work. So it basically means that you need to take all reasonable steps to make it very clear, not only to your workers, but your suppliers, your subcontractors, anyone that you engage with, that sexual harassment isn't tolerated. It could and should constitute grounds for very, very serious disciplinary action, and that it's not condoned. So it's important with these types of changes for employers basically to do what they can to make it very clear to all and sundry what's acceptable and what's not.
Okay. And I don't think I don't think anyone has a problem with, you know, I guess just general protection of people that might be vulnerable, that you may have the opportunity to protect within the workplace. But in relation to that, how is it, so if I'm an employer, and that example you've just used where one of my staff is having a drink at a pub later and they happen to meet one of my suppliers and there is something that happens, and what sort of obligations am I under, and how do I, you know, don't get me wrong, whilst I want to protect and help them, how do I make sure that I am fulfilling that to, I guess, the level that the law would require?
Yeah, well, I think the answer in that situation would be just to make it very clear to your subcontractors and to your suppliers that what you expect as a company in relation to this obligation and the need to ensure that nobody feels sexually harassed and that no allegations or conduct constitutes sexual harassment is taking place when engaging with your employees whenever, wherever. You also make it very clear to your employees that they have a right to say this attention is unwelcome, they have a right to report it, that you've got appropriate policies and procedures in place, and that you make it very, very clear to everyone what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. And effectively, when it comes to this subject, you simply say it's always unacceptable. I would include it in my policies and procedures manual. I would make it clear when I employ new staff and induct them, make it clear in their contracts of employment, I'm engaging a new subcontractor, using a new supplier, take every possible step you can to make it clear what the expectations are and what's not going to be acceptable. The other element here is that, and this goes back to your first question, is that we now have a capacity for the Fair Work Commission to get involved and issue stop sexual harassment orders and to get involved in disputes at the workplace where there might be allegations of sexual harassment taking place. So previously this was only available in a court scenario and was generally only available under the Sex Discrimination Act. Normally that would involve an action brought by a state or territory regulator. Now you can have an employee who of their own bat or their union can go to the Fair Work Commission and say, I want an order because I feel I'm being sexually harassed in the workplace. And the Fair Work Commission can actually order employers to put in place certain things in order to stop that sexual harassment from happening. And that's a new element part of this legislation as well, something that hasn't been triggered just yet because this element of the law only started on the 1st of March. But it does mean that there's another avenue there for an employee other than the existing conventional avenues to pursue. And employers will have to go to the commission and they'll have to comply with any orders made.
So, I mean, and given that things like this happen, you know, this is why these sort of laws are created. And with the likely scenario that at some point these bit of law is going to be used as an employer, what do I do? I mean, I'm flat out, I'm working, I'm doing things. Do I just sit on it and wait for the process to happen?
No, of course. So be proactive. I mean, get out there, review your sexual harassment complaints handling policies and procedures that might be in place. You might want to conduct regular training with your staff to reinforce your expectations. Max, if you were a employer in a business, I would expect that you would be a leader in developing a positive workplace culture that would basically lead from the top and make it very clear that you don't engage in this type of harassment and set the example for everybody else in your business. I'd also be randomly doing audits of other units within your business to make sure they've got the appropriate policies, procedures in place, and also so that you can assess your workers' attitudes to sexual harassment to make sure that this is not a bit of a wink, nudge, this is a construction site. This type of stuff is acceptable because it's not. And, of course, it's even simple little things. If you're sending off people to that conference in Las Vegas, if you've got your Christmas party coming up at the Kingo or any pub, in fact, or if, in fact, you've got online interactions between staff members after hours, be it Signal, be it text messaging, be it over email, make it very clear what your expectations are just because they're in Las Vegas, just because they're at the Christmas party, just because it's after hours, doesn't mean that the law doesn't apply, and it doesn't mean that your expectations should not apply.
So what happens in Vegas no longer stays in Vegas?
Correct.
All right.
It never did.
And that is, isn't that the truth?
You're listening to the Master Builders Podcast, by Master Builders, for Master Builders.
All right. So I hear there's also some changes to flexible work arrangements. This was another thing that I thought was already in the law. So what's happening here?
Yep. So essentially, there's always been a right within the Fair Work laws for employees to request, in certain circumstances, flexible work arrangements. Now, those circumstances are particularly things like you've got a family responsibility, you've got a young child, or you're going to pick up people after school, things like that. That has now been expanded to include circumstances where somebody might be experiencing family or domestic violence. And that would apply whether or not the alleged perpetrator of that violence is a member of their immediate household or not, so that they will now be able to make that request. The second thing that's changed here is that you now have more steps as an employer when responding to requests for flexible work conditions. So in the past, the Act simply said that the employer had the right to make the request and that the employer had to reasonably consider the request and respond to the employee to either grant or deny that request. Now, you are firstly limited in terms of when you can say no, and that effectively is you've got to be able to demonstrate business grounds to say that it's unworkable, and you have to respond to a request within 21 days. Now, the reason those things are important are that if you don't respond within the 21-day period, so you accidentally let it go for, say, 4 weeks, then technically that will trigger, again, some new powers that the Fair Work Commission has been given. Those new powers will enable the Fair Work Commission to actually make a decision as to whether an employee's right to it or the request that they've made for flexible work is in fact something you should accommodate or not. And in order to push back on that as an employer, you will basically have to try and explain all of your reasonable business grounds to the Fair Work Commission. So effectively, if you don't meet that 21-day timeframe, or if you don't respond in an appropriate way, or if the employer wants to challenge what you've said to them, then they can now go to the Fair Work Commission. So it's really important that it's no longer just a case of going, oh, yeah, I'll give that some thought. Maybe I'll come back to you at some point. You now need to give it considered thought. You now need to give it considered thought within 21 days. You need to go back and explain why you can either agree to the request or you're refusing the request. And if you refuse it, you need to essentially outline any cost or productivity reasons that explain exactly why it is on reasonable business grounds that you can't accommodate the request.
So is this flexible work arrangement construction specific, or is it, are we just talking this is flexible working hours, broad spectrum, everyone have a crack?
So this applies to all workers under the Fair Work Act. Yep. The difficulty, of course, we've got in building and construction is that it's very difficult to make or say or respond positively to a request for flexible working conditions, given that the conditions within the sector are fairly stock standard. It's not as though you can say to a supervisor of an apprentice, yeah, I'm very happy for you to like knock off 3 hours early on this day or start late on that day if that person is required to supervise apprentices. It may well be that that person could be a crane operator. They could be the health and safety person on site. They could be the site manager, things like that. So if you take that one person out, then that could have a real consequence for that particular site and the way in which work is performed. So that might be a reasonable business ground to refuse, but it does create problems for building and construction. Now, flexibility is very important in this industry. We do want to make sure that workers are able to enjoy flexible work conditions. We do think that's really important. I suppose that there's always going to be some practical implementation problems when it actually comes to applying that on site. That's why it's really important that you know what the new rules are, that you follow those new rules, and as long as you comply with them, you're fine. Obviously, we encourage flexibility wherever possible, but it's not always possible. And if it's not possible, we'll make sure you're doing the right thing and that you follow the new steps to ensure that you don't find yourself in the Fair Work Commission unnecessarily.
All right. Well, that sounds interesting and potentially, a potential trap for young players. I've asked you a lot of questions and you have given us a lot of information. And I'd like to thank you for your time.
Well, thanks, Max. And just before I go, can I just say, of course, these changes are extremely complex. The detail, there's a lot of detail that underpin all of them. Don't necessarily just rely on me. Ring your local master builder's office to get information and advice, which is local and specific to your situation. Second thing I'd like to say is that I understand people listening to this might think, geez, we are getting smashed in the face with the industrial relations compliance and red tape bat week in, week out. And that is an entirely understandable view. And I have to say to you that the main thing that we do here at Master Builders is to make sure that all of our members, particularly those small and medium members, that these type of changes that come through deliver perhaps not the best outcome for our members, but at least the least worst outcome. Each day we are fighting to make sure that these changes don't unnecessarily disrupt your business or have unintended consequences for the membership. It's not about saying no, it's about making sure that our members have a voice and that the law does what politicians say it's going to do, and it does it in a way that minimises the adverse, bad impacts on members. That's what we're here doing each and every day, and that's what we'll keep doing, particularly in relation to this second tranche.
Yep. And I suppose you, based on that, you know, not only, you know, I mean, so much of the work we do is unseen, but there is support networks, and that's what Master Builders provides. We provide support networks to help businesses practically work their way through changes like this so they can continue on doing their work and not feeling not swamped or not worrying that they have got no help to comply with new laws that move through.
Absolutely right. Master Builders is like a union for employers. It does two things. Firstly, it makes sure that people have got a voice and that the needs of our industry are represented when it comes to the changes to the law, potential changes. The second thing that we're here to do is to help people navigate those changes once they have become law, and to make sure that complex legislation, which might enthral idiots like me, can be translated and made simple, easy and clear. And that's exactly what we do each and every day. And that's what our state and territory offices are doing right around the country.
Do you have any predictions that what might be changed in the IR space in the future?
Yes, I do have some very strong predictions. My guesses are based purely on election commitment promises that were made at the last election and which have yet to be implemented. There are going to be a number of tranches, and in fact, you probably picked that phrase tranche up by listening to the Minister, the Honourable Tony Burke MP, who's the Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations, who had a national press club speech late last year, talked about the two tranches of industrial relations change coming in 2023. Now, he categorised those as being a controversial changes and non-controversial changes. Now, the non-controversial changes, we've seen at this point a draft of those. Whether they're non-controversial or not remains to be seen, but that will be coming in the next couple of weeks, and that will be reasonably minor changes to the Fair Work Act, and just a few tweaks and improvements here and there, clarifications, and just making certain parts of the Act which are unclear very clear. So that will be the first tranche. Then we're going to have the second tranche this year, which will come in the second half, which even the Minister has described as the controversial changes. And they include things like gig workers, wage theft, same job, same pay, and a flagged secure Australian jobs code. They're going to be the important ones for building and construction.
I've asked you a lot of questions and you have given us a lot of information. And I'd like to thank you for your time.
Well, thanks, Max. And just before I go, can I just say, of course, these changes are extremely complex. The detail, there's a lot of detail that underpin all of them. Don't necessarily just rely on me. Ring your local master builder's office to get information and advice, which is local and specific to your situation. Second thing I'd like to say is that I understand people listening to this might think, geez, we are getting smashed in the face with the industrial relations compliance and red tape bat week in, week out. And that is an entirely understandable view. And I have to say to you that the main thing that we do here at Master Builders is to make sure that all of our members, particularly those small and medium members, that these type of changes that come through deliver perhaps not the best outcome for our members, but at least the least worst outcome. Each day we are fighting to make sure that these changes don't unnecessarily disrupt your business or have unintended consequences for the membership. Mm. It's not about saying no. It's about making sure that our members have a voice and that the law does what politicians say it's going to do, and it does it in a way that minimises the adverse, bad impacts on members. That's what we're here doing each and every day, and that's what we'll keep doing, particularly in relation to this second tranche.
You're listening to the Master Builders podcast, by Master Builders, for Master Builders. I personally found it really good to get to talk to Sean about industrial relations. It's evident that this is really complicated space, and it's amazing getting the opportunity to speak with someone who really knows the ins and outs and all the complexities of it. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Max Rafferty, and until next time, stay safe.